Hey, movie lovers, you can enjoy Real Nerds Podcast in many ways. You can go to our website, realnerdspodcast.com. There you'll find articles and the podcast. You can go to our YouTube channel and you will see the Real Nerds Pod Show. We're also on Blue Sky. Hey, did you know Facebook is still a thing for people? Yep, we're on there too. We are also on Threads. There are many ways to interact with us. All our film adventures are posted on Instagram. If you have a social media account, you can find the Real Nerds Podcast.
Camera, action!
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd
just
can...
talk to film!
I'm sorry.
Take it outside.
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd will turn out all the gods. Lights, camera, action!
You have been chosen to listen to the greatest podcast about movies in the world.
Real Nerds Podcast!
Finish him.
Every week, the Real Nerds Podcast sees a new movie.
Johnny Cage.
This Sonya. Week, we saw...
Kano.
Mortal Kombat 2.
Scorpion.
I feel like I'm really lucky. I sell this to my wife after... So, funny story. When there's a movie I really want to see, I want to see it on Thursday. Like, you know, in the old days. Usually I'd see them at midnight, but they really don't do midnight movies anymore. Except for Super Mario, which I thought was kind of weird. But anyways, so the first showing of Mortal Kombat 2 at the big show was 6:15 on Thursday. So I went into my boss's office and I said, "Hey, sir, all the work's done. We have coverage. I'm going to leave early to go see Mortal Kombat."
Like, I'm turning in my gun and my badge because yeah. I got to see Mortal Kombat. He's like, "No, Ryan, it's okay.
Yeah.
You see your movie."
He did. He said, "Like, all right, if that's what you want to use your PTO on, I mean." And I said, "Cool story, sir. I actually work so much overtime, I won't be using any PTO." and I said, "And sir, just to give you a heads up, in July, I might be doing the same thing." And he says, "Let me guess, Spider-Man?" I said, "You know it." So, yeah. So, our movie of the week is Mortal Kombat 2. Of course, I'm really excited. Before we get into that, though, over the years at Real Nerds, we've been very fortunate to meet people. And one of the most eccentric, generous people we have ever met was Jonathan Tiersten.
I feel like he found us.
He did. So, Mile High Horror, 2012. They gave us a booth there because how did we get a booth at Mile High Horror? Who did we know?
I don't know.
God, so long ago.
Maybe someone at the C Film Center?
Or no, it was Tsunami, because Tsunami used to do Denver Comic Con, and they said, "Hey, you guys should be at Mile High Horror." So we went to Mile High Horror, and while we were there, they had, you know, some horror movie people.
Kane Hodder
and Bill Moseley and Jeffrey Reddick, Dan Myrick, and Jonathan Tiersten. And we didn't know how to approach people. We were still really new and say, "Do we just walk up and talk to them? What do we do?"
Yeah, I think it was our first con after Denver Comic Con.
It was.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting there and this man came up and started talking to me. And then he was funny.
I feel like he just sat down and just like waited for you to like acknowledge him.
Yeah. No, that's exactly what happened. He was walking by. He sat down and he says, "Do you want me to be on your show?" And I said, "Sure." And he says, he asked me, "Have you seen Sleepaway Camp, right?" And I said, "Oh." I said, "Are you Jonathan Tiersten?" And at the time, I was the only one in our podcast who had seen this movie. And Jonathan Tiersten played Ricky, the foul-mouthed cousin in a notorious slasher movie called Sleepaway Camp. While we were there, Jonathan and I really hit it off. He became a friend, and we saw him the following year at Mile High Horror, which was at Alamo. And before that Alamo, we were at Starfest, where he was playing music live. And I remember we were there, and I had this idea for a part of our pod show where Jonathan Tiersten playing himself because he had just done the movie The Perfect House, where he was a serial killer. And I thought it'd be fun to, that he'd play himself. And I was so consumed, my character was so consumed with being famous that he wasn't inviting me over to his house to be in a movie. He was inviting me in over to his house to eat me.
Like a cannibal.
Like a cannibal. And so you and I worked out the outline.
You James, and James.
I thought me and you worked it out, then James wrote it.
Nope.
Okay. Well, James and I worked out the outline.
It was all you and James on this one. I just shot it.
Okay, cool. So I did the outline. James fleshed it out, gave dialogue to people. And I remember I called Jonathan, and the only way this would work is if he would do it. And Jonathan is a part of SAG. We don't have any money. So I asked him, I said, hey, we don't have money. We really can't pay you, but I have this idea where I want to be famous and you want to eat me and you're the serial killer and you're a cannibal. And he says, yeah, send me the script. And I sent him the script. He called me back and he said, yeah, I'll do it. And not only did he do it, he invited us to his house to shoot at his house in Fort Collins. And while we were there, he made us barbecue for real. And it was good. And one of the things I remember about this shoot is I had this, Brad knows this working with me. I always have these ideas when we're shooting to change stuff and make it more of a pain in the ass. But I had this idea because Jonathan was a great musician that he would write a song and sing it to me while I was cooking in a tub. And I asked Jonathan on the spot, I said, is there any way you could get your guitar and play a song and, you know, about eating me? And he just looks at me and says, yeah, sure. And so he wrote this really kind of chilling song about eating me. And then we invited him to open screen night, and it went over like went over very well. It's very funny. And it's all because he was willing to take a chance on us. Because also at the Mile High Horror, remember, he introduced us to Jeffrey Reddick. He got all those people to come over to talk to us. And so over the years, I developed a friendship with Jonathan. And even as recent as April 19th of this year, I was working a graveyard shift. And he was texting me, and I was texting him back. I remember I was in the parking lot of where I work, and my phone rings, and it's Jonathan. And I go, oh, that's cool. And because it's like 1 a.m, and he lives in New Jersey, so it's 3 a.m. there. And I said, hey, man, what are you doing? And he asked me what I was doing because I was texting him at that time. I said, oh, man, I'm working a grave shift. He says, oh, man, I'll talk to you for a little bit. So he talked to me for like an hour and a half, and he was telling me about his son, and his son wanted to become a police officer. And he asked if his son could do a ride-along with me. I said, of course. And he says, yeah, I'll set that up. And in the intermediate before that, too, he was sending me clips of the music he was working on. He's planning a new album. And one of the things that always touched me is he was always so cool to me. He recorded just him and his guitar, I Don't Want to Talk About It, which is a Rod Stewart song. That it's my wife's favorite song. And he did an acoustic version and just sent it to me. And I would never share it with anybody because it was special. But a couple days ago, I got word that he passed away. And I was fucking devastated. Because, like I said, I talked to him April 19th. And I don't know why he died. I don't know how he died. But it kind of hit me hard. And I go, fuck, man. Because he was always, I'm not name dropping at all. And I know he was an actor and a musician, but he was also a dad first. And he would call and text me all the time. And sometimes you don't realize how lucky you are until something's taken from you. And the last thing I said to him was he sent me a demo from his album. And he's working on changing the pitch of how he was singing. And I said, man, you can sing anything. It sounds awesome. And I can't wait to hear the finished product. And that's the last thing I said to him. And then I found out he died a week later. So He was only 60. So cherish people. You never know what's going to happen. Now that he's gone, I'll wait a little bit. I never want to exploit someone's death. But there'll be some point I think I will put up his I don't want to talk about it somewhere. Because that's the kind of person he was. He was always cool to us. He became a friend to me. And he knew I loved Rod Stewart. So he performed an acoustic version of one of Rod Stewart's songs and just gave it to me.
Yeah.
Just to me. He wasn't going to put it anywhere. And to not have that anymore sucks.
Yeah. I wish we'd been able to do other stuff with him. Like, yeah. I feel like we got a lot from that episode.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we did enough back for that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't feel like we thanked him enough, I guess.
Yeah. And what's cool with him is he never really asked for it.
Yeah.
And I get what you're saying. He told me that he wasn't going to be in movies or do music again. He became a tennis pro in New Jersey. Hmm. But he slowly, once you're an artist, you know this, Brad, you're an artist. You kind of always have that drive to keep doing it. He booked a movie. He was releasing a new album. And he was planning on touring the East Coast. So I think he was starting to get back into it. And it's a shame. Because I love his albums. If you want to support his family, you can go on iTunes, look up Jonathan Tiersten. His band is called the 10 Tiers. And he has a couple really great albums. And... you know, it just breaks my heart. I didn't know how to process it.
Yeah.
Because I haven't really seen him in probably 7 years. But
you still talk to him.
But I talk to him regularly. And because I found out from Zach, because I wasn't on the internet that day, or I mean it was like 3 or 4 days ago. He says, "You heard the horror news?" I'm like, "No." And he says, "Oh man, Jonathan died." And I go, "What?" And then I look at it, and then I send him a screenshot from my phone, April 19th. I was literally talking to him. And so, and then when I look, he died a week before. So he died maybe 5-6 days after I talked to him. So yeah, it sucks. I remember the open screen night. I always laughed because he gave critical analysis of some of the movies and he got booed. And it was funny because he didn't care.
Yeah. I don't think he understood the vibe.
No, he didn't. Yeah. And that's why it was awesome. it's a bummer because, like I said, a friend and,
the song, I think you probably should ask permission from whatever his estate is.
Yeah, I don't know.
Before you do that. I like the idea of you not doing it. Like, just keep it to yourself.
Oh, yeah, no, it's fun.
But if his estate's like, I don't know if they'd ever hear this, but like, no, please share that with everybody, then yeah, I'd say do it. Because we want people to at least hear what he was going to put out.
Yeah, and I'm just going over my, like, text with him. We had this conversation about what it means to have religion in your life. And he's Jewish, but he wasn't actively practicing. And I'm always in the belief that you should do what you want to do. If you feel that you want to have faith, then you should do it. And he agreed wholeheartedly. And so we have this kind of philosophical, you know, hey, if you want to go to church, you want to do that stuff, that's up to you. I would never judge anybody for that. So it's a bummer. It's a bummer that I won't have those conversations anymore. I don't know how to support his family. I don't know if they ever set up a GoFundMe or anything.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything. Of course, if they did, I'd share it.
Yeah. I guess his son's an adult now, so.
Yeah. I remember he met his son so long ago.
Yeah.
He was a young kid.
But he probably doesn't need as much support as you'd think.
Well, I mean, I won't say what his mom does, but I'm guessing she's pretty well off.
Yeah.
Just a bummer to start the week.
Yeah.
Remember we shot those stuff at another convention with him where he was like checking me out and stuff and he was doing the Cornholio stuff from Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah, the 2013 Mile High thing, yeah.
So he was always I mean, he was cool. You'd ask him to do anything. He's like, yeah, sure.
Down to clown.
Yeah. He was always so funny.
I can't believe he was 60 also. Like, he didn't seem like a 60-year-old.
No, he was always in great shape.
Yeah.
Like I said, he was a tennis pro.
Yeah. You can see his abs in our episode.
Yeah. I remember that too. There's a couple funny things I always remember because me and you are stupid. I mean, at the end of the day,
we are stupid.
We have stupid humor. And I remember when we had that huge dildo and I wanted him to hit me in the face with it.
Oh, my God.
And he asked me if he could really hit me. I'm like, fuck yeah, he can totally hit me. And so he did. And he had those really nice jeans that he's willing to cut to make
short shorts.
And he took a real nerd shirt and made it a midriff. And just the things he would be willing to do for us, you know, and more a technical thing. Remember when he laid on the fork for like 5 minutes to get the shot?
Yeah.
And I know you felt
so
bad
for making him do that because it's like my shitty cinematography just makes him do it over and over again. And he's like banging his knees on the floor.
I know. But the cool thing is he never complained. And he said, no, it needs to look more real. So I'll keep it right there. And we're like, dude, we don't want to hurt you. He's like, fuck it. I'll do it.
Yeah. And we didn't go into it planning like that's how the episode was going to end. We just kind of figured it out based on what we shot.
Yeah.
So definitely like an on the fly decision.
That's cool. What you brought up with him too, is he was really good at the improv too.
Yeah. Cause you guys, before you get hit with the dildo, like,
yeah,
I think there's like a ton of extra footage on the special features of you guys bantering back and forth.
Yeah. Because he came up because he's a real actor. So anything we wrote, I wouldn't care if he rewrote or he redid it. Cause I mean, whatever. And he told me, he says, well, I'm going to have, can I add that I added a sprig of rosemary? I was like, dude, totally. And I know it's extra work for you, but it'd be really fun to add his song into this part right here, just to show you how creative he was and how fast he thought of this. It had to have been like 10 minutes. Do you mind playing Squeal Piggy by Jonathan Tiersten?
Ryan's so plump and delicious.
So I just want to say thanks to Jonathan. One of my favorite things he did, and I'll end it on this. I know I've been going on for a while. I used to tell him, I'd always say, thanks, man. You're awesome. And he'd say, I never really liked you. And then I said, I know, man, but I love you. And he'd always send back, I know I love you too. So, yeah. Miss you, buddy. But I'll cherish the memories we have. And I'll always have you on a Blu-ray with me and you acting. And that can never be replaced. This week on Real Nerds Podcast, we saw Mortal Kombat 2. Stay tuned. We'll play recommend the film or not, play the trailer, and then spoil the movie. We'll also talk about the big movie news of the week. And, we'll talk about what we watched. It's what we do. It's how we roll. Brad, I swear to God, you better have liked this movie. I'm going to fucking... No, I'm just kidding. Brad, do you recommend Mortal Kombat 2?
Yeah. It's obviously, you know way more about the franchise than I do. So I'm coming at it from sort of, I don't know, average person's perspective. And I would say that this must be... I think this might be the best Mortal Kombat movie. And it's the one where like... If I was like a huge Mortal Kombat fan, it seems like it delivers everything I ever wanted out of it. If I was that fan, as a bystander who, you know, I at least have some reference point for a lot of things. But imagine if you don't know anything about Mortal Kombat, this movie's like really weird to you because it's so niche. a lot of what I see, think are Easter eggs are delivered. Yeah, it's fun. It's gory. The story's not deep, but I feel like it feels like I'm playing the game, which I think is what it's supposed to do, right?
So, I will concur what you said. I think it is the best Mortal Kombat movie. Maybe Scorpion's Revenge. But one of the biggest complaints from the first movie was, why is there no tournament?
Yep.
This movie's like, you know what? How about it's just the tournament?
Yeah, all tournament.
Yeah. So, yes, I agree with everything you said. Being a huge Mortal Kombat, I literally have a Mortal Kombat wall in my house. I was thoroughly entertained, and yeah, before we play the trailer, I remember I dragged my wife to it and my kid, and I said, man, I never thought I'd see $100 million Mortal Kombat movie. And I mean, it looks like it. The costumes are awesome.
The first one was straight to streaming, right?
Simultaneous.
Okay.
Because it was part of their pandemic recovery thing. Here's a trailer for Mortal Kombat 2.
You want to know what makes a hero? It's not destiny. It's not something you're born with. It's searching for greatness.
Johnny Cage, you have been chosen for Mortal Kombat.
Then realizing you've had it in you this entire time.
Whoa! I really don't feel comfortable hitting a girl.
Don't worry. You won't.
Yo, send me back. I want to go back.
The rules of the tournament are simple. Our fates would not be settled by the size of our armies. They would be decided by combat.
I'm not some great warrior. I'm not some champion. This is a war for the fate of your world.
Freeze him!
Me.
Earth belongs to me.
We do not kneel.
Our only chance is to face this together.
Let's go, baby.
You, Johnny Cage, are a part of this now. It's showtime. Johnny will definitely die.
We pick up right where the first film... Well, the opening shows how Shao Kahn became into power at in Dania, which follows... Actually, it follows the games really closely. So Shao Kahn is a conqueror, and he wants to conquer all the realms. The Elder Gods, who are kind of the overseers of all the realms, put in Mortal Kombat, where you have to win 10 consecutive Mortal Kombats to overtake a world. So this one goes back to when Shao Kahn takes over Edenia and King Jared and Sindel and their daughter Kitana. And he kills Jared, takes over Edenia, and then he sets his sights on Earthrealm. Kitana, you didn't know at the time, when Mortal Kombat 2 came out, the video game, she was his daughter and... an assassin. And if you beat the game with Kitana, you learned that this part of the story where her dad was Jared. Shao Kahn killed him, and then she sought revenge. What I liked about this movie too is they market it as a Johnny Cage movie because he's obviously one of the most iconic characters in Mortal Kombat, but it's really a Katana movie. I mean, Johnny Cage is a focus point for a little bit, but it's really about Katana, which was cool. So, so this tournament starts, and it's pitting everybody against each other.
Each side has like five matches.
That's new. There's some lanterns in the sky that'll tell you who wins. And they have a choice of killing them or not. So Katana fights Johnny Cage first. And when we find Johnny Cage, he's not who we want him to be. He's funny.
He's depressed. He's negative outlook on life.
He's a fading washed action up star. Yeah. So he gets sucked into the tournament. At first, he doesn't want to do it. He just leaves. And Sonya Blade tells him, says, hey, you don't get to choose if you go to the tournament or not.
I think Raiden says that.
Oh, is it Raiden?
Yeah, he's like, you can leave, but like the gods are going to throw you back here, whether you like it or not. And he's like, sure, whatever.
Yeah, so he leaves. And he's in a bar with Ed Boon as a bartender, who's the co-creator of Mortal Kombat. And he just gets sucked into the tournament to fight Katana. And Katana decides not to kill him.
It was funny that, you know, he does the stance of like, if you don't do a finishing move, they just fall over and like it just ends.
Yeah.
And I thought that was like a great nod.
Where he's kind of rocking back and forth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so she doesn't. And then Sonya gets pitted against Sonya in the bottom of the pit, which was awesome.
Against Sindel.
Sindel, sorry. Yeah. And she kills Sindel.
Brutally.
Yeah. And then Shao Kahn fights Cole Young in the Deadpool.
Which, like, yeah, Cole Young was, like, the main hero of the previous movie. And so it would have been weird for him to not be in this one. But also, like, I wasn't attached to his character up until that point.
I know, it's crazy, huh?
Yeah, and, like, within a couple scenes, they made me, like, really want him to stay in the movie. And so when he gets taken out, you're just like, huh, I miss Cole.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, oh, his head's just got smashed, and then he's thrown into acid.
Yeah. And that whole like room design is like from a lot of this movie's from 11.
So the Deadpool's in MK2. It's the very first stage. Then you fight in the arcade ladder, but yeah, it's also in MK11 and I think MK9, a very iconic battle arena. And that's what I really liked. I mean, Shao Kahn was really cool in it. It's a bone. Shao Kahn was really cool in it. Which I always want. I mean, he should be a badass.
But a fucking cheater.
Yeah. Who cares? He's a bad guy. It's interesting that Shang Tsung kind of took a backseat. But I read an interview with the writer, and he basically listened to everything the fans were saying from the first one. You know, in the first one, they had to find their Arcana to get their superpower. And he said, yeah, that was like our midichlorian, so I just ignored it. They skipped over the, good job, buddy. The dragon tattoo stuff, or birthmark.
I forgot about all that.
Yeah. Cause it didn't matter.
Yeah.
And they just said, you know what, tournament. The Kung Lao and Liu Kang fight was awesome.
Oh, that was the best death.
Oh, it's
the
so
fact
awesome.
They like tricks him into like taking a punch and Yeah, that was a great. That was my favorite one.
Yeah, and the stage is cool. It's the portal stage. You know,
and
I
it changes color based on like who's winning.
Yeah, it's super cool. And because Kung Lao is my favorite character, and he's really cool in this movie. How he kept throwing his hat, and how Liu Kang had to keep fighting him, and then remember that the hat was coming, and it was just fucking sweet.
And the whole like. I don't know, the movie like felt very even-keeled until Kung Lao shows up in Raiden's like lair.
Yeah.
And then just like kicks off, like Raiden gets his throat slit, two of the challengers go to their fights, and it's like left with like one person or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the movie just like kicks into gear when Kung Lao shows up and like betrays. Yeah, it was
awesome. Fun that they brought back Kano, and Kano ended up being a good guy because he's you know, I don't want the world to end. Fuck that shit.
Yeah. I know, it was a good flip-flop. But also, like, yeah, by the end of the movie, say, like, oh, we're just going to go get our friends back. So I'm just like, so the whole, like, everyone dying isn't that big of a deal.
Like, no, just, in the Mortal Kombat universe, it's not. I mean,
yeah.
So this film takes a lot of all the games had in it. So Mortal Kombat 9 was kind of a retelling of the first three that brought in Shinnok's Amulet and Shao Kahn. And then 10 took place 25 years later where Shinnok comes and it has Raiden and the lore gets really complicated. But basically it's following all the stories and because Kung Lao and Jax and Nightwolf, they all get killed in number 9 and they come back as they're called Revenants. So in 10, when you first see Kung Lao, he's a Revenant, so he's a zombie. And then they basically time jump to try to fix it. And they do eventually. So so it's basically following this, where even though they're dead, they have a way to bring them back. And I love Quan Chi, and Quan Chi's in this movie. He's kind of a cool villain.
Yeah, he doesn't fight. He just
He's a necromancer.
Yeah, regenerates Kano's eyeball.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and they kill Jax. I mean, there's some people they kill, and I go, oh, I do like that because, I mean, part of the game is you're going to kill people. But when you make it that nobody's safe, because you're right. I mean, Cole Young, I mean, he's the focus of the first one, and he has that line, he says, I'm fighting for my wife and daughter, and then just to have his head just obliterated, you go, oh, shit, the stakes are real.
And then pushed into acid. Yeah. So can't get his body back.
Yeah, and then there's that great moment. And this is from 9 as well, where Liu Kang, it's tweaked a little bit, but basically Liu Kang realizes that he's not supposed to win this tournament. And he says that while he's fighting Shao Kahn. And he says, you know, this isn't my tournament to win. And he kind of goes away, and it has that great rally with Katana. And she's like, you know, I'll fight for Earthrealm. And she saws Shao Kahn's head in half.
Couple pieces.
Yeah.
And also, like, I don't know. I grew up thinking, like, they play the Tarkentans for, like, jokes.
Yeah.
I always thought, like, Brocco was, like, some badass, but...
Yeah.
But, like, his race is just, peasants.
Yeah, I mean, they are in the games, but they totally soften them in this. Because in the games are cannibals. And, I mean, he has one of the... In MK, the latest one, he has, like, a really sweet fatality where he cuts your intestine out and puts you over a fire and the rest of Tarkatans come and eat you. they kind of soften him a little bit in this, but it's still fun.
Yeah.
Because when Johnny Cage is telling him the story at the end and they're all enthralled because how he saved Earthrealm is pretty fun.
Yeah. How he saved Raiden.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then just like, and goading him into fighting to begin with, it's like calling him a pussy. And
yeah.
Wait, you're supposed to fight Liu Kang.
Isn't it like that one scene where as he's like telling the story, like every single one of the Baraka dudes are like just like staring dead at him, like in a campfire in the middle of the desert?
Yeah, you're right. It's because he's telling a lie and they're enthralled with his story he's telling.
Yeah.
And even like the little baby Barakas.
when he goes into the tent and he sees the two baby Barakas, he's like, ugh.
Yeah. He's, shh. And they point, and I was like, thanks fucking a lot.
Yeah.
And
he gets
thrown into the group. Yeah, it's fun. And Carl Urban's really fun as Johnny Cage. It's interesting that, you know, Scorpion in both movies isn't really in them. This one, the last 10 minutes of the movie. And it's fun, though.
He wasn't in the first one that much? I feel like there's a whole, like, half of the movie's dedicated to him.
No, the first one, he's at the very beginning. And then he comes back at the end. when to fight. Sub-Zero's in the whole movie.
Okay.
And in this one, they use Noob Saibot, or they call him Bi-Han, but it's kind of cool when they're fighting the shadow of him and how it was shot. I love when he would run and fall into the ground, and it was really cool. The movie is really cool. And that's all I want. All I want from a Mortal Kombat movie, tournament, people getting killed, it's funny, and it's gory. And they accomplished it.
Yeah.
Corinne sent me a message and saying, is Raiden a glorified cameo in this again? And I had to tell her, I said, well, even in Mortal Kombat, you can play as him in the games, but he's really just a guy who kind of oversees Earthrealm. He's never been
the driving protagonist.
Because it's always been Liu Kang.
He's much like an Obi-Wan.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. He just guides people. I mean, his character design's really cool, but, and they even reference Big Trouble in Little China. It's great. And then Carl Urban also references Lord of the Rings. It's fun. It's a really fun movie.
Yeah. I'll probably see it again.
Well, yeah. I want to go see it in 4DX.
Is it in 3D?
I don't know. I wonder if the 4DX is just the seats and effects. I don't know. Because that'd be fun. Maybe I'll do that in a week when it won't be as crazy.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
You said there's movie news?
Yeah.
It's real news!
Well, did you see the Street Fighter trailer? Was it before your Mortal Kombat?
I don't remember. I mean, it was on the internet weeks ago, so I saw it there.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. It looks better on the big screen.
Yeah, I think it looks fun. Like, they're embracing all the silliness of it.
They're definitely doing that.
I don't know about the song choice for the trailer.
And it seems like they're following Ken.
And Ryu, as they should.
Yeah, but I don't know.
And it's set in 93, so that's cool.
Which is fun.
And it sounds like Bison has some overarching plan beyond the tournament. So, I don't know. I guess this week, maybe not movie news, but game news. Star Fox.
Yeah, Star Fox. Which I saw that you're able to now use a camera.
That's the coolest feature.
Emote.
Do an AR... Like, use your own face if it's skinned as the Star Fox characters.
So who are you going to be? Chat, Fox McCloud?
I'll probably try everyone at least once.
I mean, I was always a fan of Slippy.
I don't have the camera yet, so...
I don't either.
Yeah. But makes me want to get one.
Yeah, are you going to get the Piranha Plant one?
Probably not. I still have to get the controller. I liked one thing, and now my feed is just like... all the posts from people who like complain about the character designs. Yeah. It was like,
did you even see, maybe I'm just, I don't know. I never even looked at the character designs. I thought it was fine.
I'm 40 years old and I've seen them change from like Star Fox 1 to 64 to Star Fox Adventures to the movie. Like, I've never once been like, oh, this little tweak is so detrimental to my experience of Star Fox.
And is Star Fox such a beloved franchise that they can't tweak the designs?
There was the last Star Fox game was what, 2011?
Yeah.
So.
And they only show up in Smash Brothers games? I don't know.
Like, okay, so they haven't. That game didn't do well. So you expect Nintendo to, like, come out firing on all cylinders? Like, they're going to put Breath of the Wild level development to Star Fox to get you a new game? Like, no, they're going to re-release this one, see what the demand is. Then maybe Star Fox 2 is, like, you know, Breath of the Wild level.
And it's one of those things where it's, then don't fucking play it.
Yeah.
If it's that big of a deal to you, just don't complain. Yeah. It drives me insane.
Like, if it's just a graphical upgrade, great, sure, I'll play it again.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, it has the AR thing. It has the, 3D world flying ability that the 64 had. And something else I forget. But, yeah, then there's also, like, this fan theory that, like, their boot design was because they like amputated their legs so they could like withstand zero G's. I'm like, the fans made that up. Like, that's your thing. That's not anything in the books or the instruction manuals. Like, why are you upset about your fan theory not being true. Like,
yeah, that's it happens a lot. I get into debates with people about how they want something to be, and it's not what happens. And you're not the steward of these characters, so yeah. You should allow, you know, who's ever in charge of it, let them see their vision through. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Guess what? You're not really going to damage the brand, because they'll make another Star Fox game in 10 years, and then you can decide if it's going to piss you off or not.
Yeah, and they're also like, why isn't his voice the same as the movie? Like, because they paid Glenn Powell for the movie. Yeah. The movie's going to make, well, it made tons of money. The game, they're not going to pay Glenn Powell his salary to do the remake game.
You know, the other thing I'd say is, dude, if you're Glenn Powell, why don't you just do it for fun?
Yeah.
Because, like, how hard is that job, actually?
Or take a cut, you know?
Yeah, I mean, small cut. I mean, I'm sure it's difficult. Well, if you're doing something like, you know, The Last of Us or Uncharted, where it's really motion capture. But for something like this, you just go in and say, I don't know, probably 30, 40 minutes of lines. Can't be that hard. Mm-hmm.
Maybe the residuals are different.
I'm sure they are, but I mean, how much money does Glenn Powell need? He's kind of a big star now, right?
Yeah. Probably upped his rate.
I would do it.
But yeah, it's just like a lot of dumb criticisms of...
Yeah, it's always a bummer.
Like, you need to buy this one, and if the sales are huge, Nintendo will be like, okay, we need to write a new story for Star Fox and mm-hmm. like make a legit new game. But the evidence isn't there yet, so...
Yeah, and you know, we always say, too, see a movie before you judge it. And I just... The quick to judge everything right now is such a bummer. It's just such a bummer.
Everyone's got to get that take out there for clicks.
Yeah.
Sucks. But I already pre-ordered it, so.
Me too. Because.
It's coming.
I will pretty much buy every first-party Nintendo game. In fact, if you look at my Switch 2, it's literally just first-party Nintendo stuff. Because they are the best developers, and I'll take that with me to the grave. They just make fun games. There's very few Nintendo published games where I've played go, this game sucks. Or there's not some redeeming quality in it. So yeah, I'll play it and it'll be fun.
Also too, like when people are complaining about not a new story, I was like, you know what? It's funny they haven't explored the, you know, Fox's father story. Like there's a lot of that prologue of like mm-hmm. Andross killed James McCloud or like he disappeared. And then like a couple of days later, they revealed that there is a prologue for James McCloud before this movie. So like an extended thing. So it's like, oh, it's not a full story, but you know,
it's still there.
So yeah, but the next game could expand on that.
Yeah. Just play it. You know, and I think of Star Fox a lot like Kirby. I mean, it's, yeah, he's like a second tier Nintendo character, or franchise. So just play it.
Yeah.
It's fun. I will promise you this. The game will be fun.
Actually, I played Star Fox 64 the other night.
Yeah.
Just like I was terrible at it.
Oh, yeah. It'd probably take me a while because I played Star Fox on the that mini SNES really recently. And I go, oh, man.
I've lost a step.
Yeah.
I remember being like, you know, because we played that combat part of it so much like on the N64. But yeah, getting back into it, I was like, I can't get the gun to stay on the target. Just he's wandering around.
And you wonder how you were that good when you were a kid.
Yeah.
And when you play those old games, when I'm on my Nintendo Online, I go, man, how did I put up with this as a kid? Just constantly dying.
Yeah.
No way to really continue.
It felt like I worked like hours on mm-hmm. this, and it's, oh, this was 30 minutes? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was playing Mega Man recently, I started playing them, the old ones again. And I mean, I played them when the collection came out, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. But I'm always surprised how short the levels are. And Mega Man 2 is one of the most brilliant games ever. And I just remember it being so hard as a kid. And now I go, man, it's literally just maybe 10 screens. And then you're at, the boss. But then, I mean, they didn't have that much memory on those cartridges. But,
yeah, man,
they could squeeze a lot out of it.
People are also complaining, too, about, like, the lack of the Star Fox Adventures characters. I'm just like, well, Rare made that game, so they probably belong to Rare.
Yeah. Yeah, they're probably fucked on that.
Yeah.
I did pick up, I was at level 7 games, and I got Conker's Bad Fur Day on vinyl. the soundtrack.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's I
wish they'd put that on the online. I want to play that again.
Dude, it's so bad. And I was trying to explain it to Callan because he was at his math tutor. And I, when he was there, I just walked over to level 7 games. And I was looking and go, oh, man, is that a Conker's Bad Fur Day soundtrack? And the guy's like, yeah, we just got him in. I was like, yeah, I'll take that. Because I need to listen to The Great Mighty Pooh and on vinyl, I think. Is, because I always remember in that game where he goes, it comes out of my butt. Your butt. My butt. Your butt.
Because it's a flower monster or whatever, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's a big piece of poop that has corn for teeth.
Again, like it's been 20 years since I played it.
Good stuff. We watched stuff throughout the week in a segment I call What We've Been Watching.
So, yeah, this is the stuff we've been watching.
I watched, okay, all new stuff. Michael, the Michael Jackson movie.
Mm, how was that?
It's a biopic.
You know, the reason I didn't pick it for our film of the week, it's not because I actually like Michael Jackson as a performer, but Bohemian Rhapsody was so popular, and when I watched it, I go, why is this movie nominated for Best Picture? Why do people love this movie? And I realize it's just the songs, because the movie is not that great. And then when I was seeing trailers for Michael, it seems like it was just a greatest hits of his talented nephew is reenacting his stuff. And that's why I always scoff at my wife and James, because they hate Walk Hard. But I think Walk Hard is so spot on in its parody of
critique of those movies.
Yeah. So anyways, Michael, is it any good?
I think it's worth a watch. Again, it follows those tropes. But also, like, it ends in 1988, so it misses a lot of his career. Mm. And it literally, at the movie, says his story continues almost like he's Jesus. Mm. So I'm like, is there a Michael 2 coming? Or is that just like...
I think there is.
Or is that like, hey, you should go look up more about this guy that we don't want to like cover.
Did you see Weekend Update this week with Tucker Carlson?
Yeah.
They stopped it when he became white. What are we doing? What's going on here? That dude's Tucker Carlson is spot on.
Yeah. But yeah, the music is great. And again, it kind of covers, like, what was I talking about last week? Stuff we already, like, when I was talking about Prince, well, Prince's movie was like made up, but yeah, this is like, I already knew like his father was abusive. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Coleman Domingo's really great in it. Like, he's, you know, sort of like likable, but also like mean and manipulative. Mm. And like when he comes on screen, you are afraid of him. Mm. Like I imagine Michael Jackson was. Yeah, his like, and like his, you said nephew, that's Jafar Jackson.
Yeah.
Anyway, Jafar Jackson, I think his performance is really good, but like the fact that Michael Jackson is like this child-minded person, mm-hmm. You know, he has a child's mind, but he has acquired like all this fame and wealth. I don't know. There's like something about this. It's like sort of off-putting. Or you're like, how is he able to like achieve all this with like that mentality? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just covers the Jackson 5 and then him like after he breaks away from them and goes solo, like up to the Bad album.
Well, he was on a run there because you have Off the Wall, then you have Thriller, then you have Bad, and those are three really great albums.
Yeah, and really, like, the movie is about, like, him just getting the confidence to go solo, I guess. That's, like, the whole thing of, like, trying to be more adult and, like, getting away from his dad and, like, having the courage to, like, stand up to him. Because, yeah, he does the Jackson 5, then he, like, becomes a young adult and he wants to like do his own thing, but he's under contract and his dad will only let him like work outside of 9 to 5. And so, you know, he's clearly a genius and he wants to do all these things and work with all these people. But like, you know, the Billy Joel documentary that I saw was really cool because it showed like, here's how he made each of these hit songs and why they're relevant to his life. And like, but in Michael, it's just like, well, he sits in the, and they just show him like sitting in the recording studio and just like tapping to a beat. And then like, yeah, he makes Thriller with no like context of, well, they do like show like he's watching monster movies ahead of that. So like that informs it, but it's like, it's also shallow in that aspect. Whereas like the Billy Joel thing was like, okay, it's like tied to this because he feels this way and he's dealing with this. Yeah. And this is just like, oh, well, he watched a monster movie, so he made Thriller. Okay.
You know, one of the telling things about Michael Jackson is they did that This Is It just before he died, or after he died, that documentary. That
concert film, yeah.
And he, his level of genius when he's, because he doesn't read music, but they're doing this rehearsal with him and he's hearing a beat and he's figuring out the choreography. So that level of thinking, I don't know how you put that in a movie.
Yeah, maybe it's like too enigmatic that you can't process it without, we don't have the luxury of him being here to explain it anymore. So I guess the filmmaker's like, well, all we can show is like him tapping on a table and then watching a movie. So there's that. And like, I don't think anyone like did a biography of him while he was alive, right?
There's a great, I have the extended editions of his albums. And on Off the Wall, Don't Stop Till You Get Enough, they have the demo of it, and it's Janet Jackson and his brothers blowing into soda bottles, and he's going dun, 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 and they're going, and it's really cool. And yeah, that level of genius. And so I don't know if that's in the movie either, of how they kind of worked through songs like that. And see, that would have been cool.
Not that level. Yeah, like I'm just hearing that for, that wasn't in the movie. And I just thought of like the kid who plays young Michael Jackson, not Jafar, also amazing, and no one's talking about it. I don't know. He's like what, 7 or 8 years old?
Yeah, I mean, it has to be, right.
Yeah, and like maybe he's dubbed, but like that's him dancing like Michael Jackson. And like it's fun that I think this is probably well known, but like in the recording studio, like he wouldn't stop dancing, and the, you know, the recorders are like, look, you got to not move because then we're going to pick up your clothes moving. So sit still. And he can't sit still because like that's how he gets the energy to do the performance. So they constantly have to like hold him back. And eventually he learns to like rein it in. But that seems something like something I heard before vaguely.
I don't remember hearing that. But
no? Yeah. But anyway, yeah, it's like it's not. Like I didn't learn too much new stuff, but again, like the performances are great, and I mean for what it is and what you can do, and obviously they don't want to touch the '90s stuff. So, yeah, we'll see if there's a sequel. I also saw Hokum.
Oh, the Adam Scott one.
Adam Scott, scary horror movie. I don't know if you're gonna like it because it's a total jump scare movie.
No.
Like, the whole movie relies on just, like, surprise! Surprise! Yeah.
Are they telegraphed really easily?
I think I was surprised by a couple, but, like, the whole movie is just that, to where I think at some point I was, like, dead to it.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, oh, this again.
I felt like that when I rewatched Smile again. Like, Smile, the concept is really cool, but why does everything have to be a jump scare?
Yeah. But it revolves around, and also Adam Scott's character is really unlikable. He's a dick. He's a writer. Right out of the gate, there's a bunch of jump scares at his house. Throughout the course of the movie, you learn about, you know, his parents are dead, and then you find out through the movie why they're dead, because he takes their ashes to where they honeymooned or something, their favorite place, to let them all out, and he, like, carefully puts his mother next to this tree that she met his dad at. Then he just like carelessly dumped his dad out. And then you find out something later about why there's this rift in his family. But he like treats the staff terribly early on. He's like sarcastic and rude. And there's like this Halloween party going on when he goes there. And he's trying to like do this retreat. And then someone in the staff that he quickly latches onto is murdered. And then he basically goes on this trying to solve the mystery of like what happened to her, and like what's going on with the hotel, because the honeymoon suite's haunted, I guess. And yeah, like that's the movie, is just him like being a skeptic and then on the trail of trying to write this thing, deal with his dead parents, and then solve this mystery. And throughout the whole movie, it's just like around, like turn around the corner, scary image, open a door, scary image. Yeah. The honeymoon suite has a bathtub full of water, which, why did no one drain it? I don't know. Yeah. But it makes for like a thing for later. Yeah. And the last thing I saw was The Sheep Detectives, which I don't think we're going to do an episode of.
Well, did you want that to be the film next week or Obsession?
I thought we were doing Top Gun.
Oh, yeah. Are we doing is it Top Gun next week, too?
Yeah. May 19th?
No, because this one's, it's going to be May 15th.
Stop.
Lincoln, get. He just won't. Yeah, if you pet him, he won't leave you alone. It's May 15th. Is it this weekend?
Should be. It's the 10th already.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It opens on the 15th?
I don't know. May 13th.
May 13th.
So Wednesday?
Yeah. Cool, yeah. We can do Top Gun for sure.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Sheep Detectives. Cute movie. the CGI animals, they look CGI, but they're super expressive for not having like big cartoony eyes and things.
Yeah.
I was pretty impressed.
I just thought it was an interesting premise.
Yeah. Well, it makes more sense when you watch the movie. It's not, it seems very like baity. Like, hey, cute animals and British people and maybe you remember Babe from 30 years ago vibes. And maybe you like Knives Out.
I do like Knives Out.
Yeah, so you might like this movie, but yeah.
They're saying there's murder.
Yeah, like the murder was, mystery was hard to follow. You know, the part of the gags in the movie, gag of the movie is that the sheep deliberately forget things. Like they actively have this process of purposely forgetting things. And it's actually a meditation on death. All the sheep believe that when they die, they just become clouds. But when this and like death is presented to them, they slowly learn that like death is a real thing that's not just for humans. And so they have to confront, like, you know, they want to forget death, but this thing tells them, like, look, if you just forget, then you, like, you erase their memory. Like, you need to sit. There's one sheep who never forgets, and he's had to carry all the bad things that have happened to the flock over the years by himself, because everyone has this convenient way of dealing with it. And then when one of them like realizes, like, oh my God, you haven't forgot any of this, and you've lived with all this sadness like by yourself. He's like, yeah, like if I forget, like it just, it does a disservice to the people we love, because if we just forget them, like they never existed, like how is that a good thing? So, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Sheep Detectives.
I only watched one new thing this week. I've been rewatching Community, which is a great show. But I watched Dead Heat, which evidently you hate.
Yeah.
I thought it was really fun. It's about these cops. It's like an 80s buddy cop movie, and one of them dies and becomes a zombie. And then there's this big zombie living forever people, and there's really cool practical effects in it. I mean, Joe Piscopo's never been funnier. I mean, more so than his Saturday Night Live stint. yeah, I mean, it's gory, it's funny. I had a lot of fun watching it.
I barely remember it.
I know, I just remember I gave it like, I think 3.5 or 4 stars. I'm like, man, this movie's pretty fun. It's, you know, Vincent Price is in it. And I saw that you gave it 1 star. I said, oh man, we do not see eye to eye on this movie. It seems like it'd be right up your alley too. It's kind of campy 80s
Yeah, I forget what I didn't like about it.
I mean, it's pretty silly.
Is it like, I don't know, is there like inappropriate, like hasn't aged well shit in it?
No, I don't think so.
Maybe that was it.
Mm-hmm. No, because I look past that stuff. That stuff doesn't bother me. But
yeah.
I mean, they don't.
Maybe the characters are stupid to me.
Well, I don't know.
I really don't remember.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally one of the cops dies and he's brought back to life through this machine that brings people back to life. And you only live for a certain amount of time before you kind of like disintegrate into nothing. Mm-hmm. And so they're trying to solve who killed him, basically. He was put in a room that sucked all the air out of the room and he died while they're investigating this pharmaceutical company.
Maybe the presentation sucked because I watched it on like Tubi or something. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. I had a lot of fun with it. The Vinegar Syndrome Blu-ray has a lot of cool special features on it. So yeah, you should check it out. Zombies, cops, 80s buddy cop movie. I had fun with it. Yeah, next week we're going to be seeing Top Gun in IMAX, the original. So that'll be fun. That'll be our movie of the week. Yep.
He's got the Need for Speed.
He does. But see, I was inverted. Bullshit. Man, that will be cool to see on IMAX. That movie's fucking awesome. Is there a more Tom Cruise movie? Probably not.
Mission Impossible.
Yeah. But I mean, that really solidified who Tom Cruise was. You know, this big action star. That'll be fun to see on the big screen. And, fuck, Tony Scott directing it. Tony Scott is a hell of a director. Sweet. Until next time, we'll see you at the movies.
Well, a real nerd knows who shot. Well, a real nerd can follow the plot. And a real nerd will come out of the guts. Lights, camera, action.
Thanks for listening to Real Nerds Podcast, a Nebulous Visions production. Stream or download episodes, read articles at realnerdspodcast.com. Stream us on Apple or Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. Follow us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. Twitter and Instagram, at Real Nerds. Watch us on YouTube, Real Nerds Podcast. Email us at realnerds@gmail.com. Call us at 720-6NERDS5. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill, Mike at Plan 9 Studios, and Bolognium for all of our groovy theme songs. And that's how you fucking do it!